This is the Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Canon, an SB Nation blog about the Columbus Blue Jackets. I am Will Chase, joined tonight by Pale Dragon and Dale Bloom. What's up, guys?
Happy 614 day, guys.
I'm doing great. How about Anthony Rizzo the other night?
14 pitch at bat,
fouls off 9 straight pitches and knocks it out of the park to tie up the game. That's getting me over some of my Blue Jackets blues at the moment.
Yeah, really. At least St. Louis lost, so we could all take solace, I think, in St. Louis losing
absolutely
games. But yeah, so jumping right into the big news, the Blue Jackets have agreed to a deal with their new head coach, Brad Larsen, a familiar face to all of us. Same guy in the organization who, of course, was under John Tortorella's staff, you know, running the power play, amongst other things. But PD, I don't think any of us necessarily thought this was going to happen, but I don't know if we're super surprised. But how about you? What was your thought when it was official that it was going to be Brad Larsen as the head coach?
Yeah, I was not happy about it. My opinion has mellowed over the weekend since then. And I've got, you know, there's positive and negatives to take away from Larsen, the person, and Larsen, the coach. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But what I wanted to start by talking about and where most of my disappointment lies is with the process of the hire and the organizational philosophy that may have gone into it. Yarmo said in the press conference that there was a Lars bar that they had that other candidates had to clear and apparently, you know, could not meet. And which just led me to ask, you know, why was Brad Larsen the default? You know, what had he really done in his career to this point to earn that kind of status? You know, if this was last offseason where the team was still riding a, you know, 4-season playoff streak and had a kind of a good thing going, a good organizational philosophy, team identity, all that, in that situation, I would have understood, like, yeah, okay, continuity to be valued. Now I would have gone with Shaw over Larsen for that regard. But anyway, I would have understood in that case. But then after the season we've had, and there were, you know, other circumstances that made it worse than maybe it should have been, but still it was a bad season. It exposed some pretty serious flaws in the team. This seemed like a great opportunity for a fresh start, to bring in some new voices, a new direction for the team. And it seems like they're saying, like, no, everything's fine. We're just going to stick with what works. And yeah, I disagree. I really disagree with that approach. Larsen has certainly, he's been responsible for more things than just the power play. And we can't, as fans, we can't get a full picture of what exactly he's been doing and, you know, what's on him, what's on Tortorella, et cetera. But we know that he has run the power play, and we know from the numbers that the power play for the last 7 years has been mostly pretty bad. And so he's going to have a lot to prove that that he has earned this position because it's not really obvious what he's bringing to the table here.
Yeah, I largely agree. And PD, I really appreciated your story this morning because he talked about the 5 stages of reacting to the Larsen hire. And I definitely went through all 5 of those stages this weekend. Denial, sure, at first was no way this is going to happen. Anger, I was pretty upset about it. And I have come around, I think, mainly to the fact that he is the coach now, and there's nothing I can do about it. He seems like a very solid individual person. He's got a lot of character, and he even has a little bit more charisma than I think that I had noticed before. So, you know, all those things being said, he had a really good press conference. I think, was that on Saturday morning or Friday morning?
Friday morning.
And he said a lot of the right things, and we can get into some of the things that Yarmo and JD said later on. But my biggest fear was that it was just a rehash of Torts, and that we weren't going to get a fresh voice and that we weren't going to get anything different as far as how the coaching staff goes about player deployments and all of that stuff that we have talked about at, you know, ad nauseum over this past season or two. But Brad Larson comes out in the press conference and he says, I'm a new voice. He made that one little interesting tidbit where he said what did he say exactly? The road splits there after he made some comments about Tortorella. And I thought that was interesting. So I think that it's going to be interesting to see as we go into a Brad Larson coaching era of what he is going to do differently. And I'm certainly hopeful that he proves us all wrong. But going back to what PD said, I completely agree. The Lars bar was weird. Why was he the default? Elliot Friedman actually reported that the Blue Jackets may even have gotten as far as talking numbers with Gerard Gallant. So what changed there? If they were talking numbers with Gallant, then, you know,
well,
was Brad Larson really the default there? So just a lot of interesting things going on.
Well, so I still think that it comes down to Lars being a cheaper option. Yeah. And especially right now, the Blue Jackets, we know they're not going to win. And that opens up a whole other thing for me, because I wish the Blue Jackets would just be transparent and even do what the Rangers did in 2018 and say, hey, we're going to suck. No one likes to lose, but we really want to turn this thing around and actually fundamentally fix everything about this organization for the better, to actually not just make the playoffs, but compete for the Stanley Cup. They talk about that all the time, but talk is cheap. And I really want to see, and I know that would still be talk, but at least I could say, okay, this team is actually understanding their problems and what they have to do going forward. But all that aside, as far as Larson, I guess if you want to look at a positive that might mean something going forward, he did have a 92-45-15 record when he was coaching in Springfield. He had guys like Cam Atkinson, who really, of course, I don't put a lot of stock in what the players are saying. I guess it's good if you hear a player say, yeah, he's the right guy. But we all know Cam's not going anywhere either, unless some miraculous trade were to happen. And it's really going to be more if it's a guy like Patrick Laine or even a guy like Seth Jones is pretty much out the window or out the door at this point anyways. But, you know, I don't put too much stock in what Cam is saying. But, you know, I guess if you're looking, like Dale said, it's kind of done. So at this point, you go forward. And Larson said that he understands the criticism. And it's going to be up to, obviously, these guys to prove us wrong and that they were right. But, you know, we're just going to have to see now. It's up to Jarmo and the front office and this team going forward to make this look good.
Yeah, you know, Larson, I like that he addressed the criticism head on. What struck me about his personality in the press conference is his humility. You know, he's a coach who seems to understand maybe where his shortcomings are and is willing to admit when he doesn't know something, or admit where there's some place where he needs help. I'm very curious to see what kind of assistance that he hires. Obviously that's going to be very important. Someone that can bring maybe some different things schematically, and then Larson maybe shifts into the role of being more of a CEO type coach, just oversees everything, manages the culture, that sort of thing. It is interesting, the player support. Now, you know, I don't think you let the players pick the coach necessarily, but I do think that what the players want should have, you know, should carry some weight in terms of who you hire, especially if you're trying to figure out, how do we get players invested in the team? How do we get players to stick around long-term? If guys that are already signed long-term, like Atkinson, like Bjorkstrand, if Larson's a guy they want, you know, I think that carries a lot of weight. I've liked the fact that there were players at the press conference. I thought it was interesting that Laine was one of those players, you know, because, you know, he had that blow up where he mouthed off at Larson and got benched for it. So people thought, oh God, you know, does Laine not like Larson? But look, there he was. Now, maybe it's just because he was at the facility. He's been working, you know, training for a little bit before he heads back overseas for the summer. But still, he's not even under contract at this point. He didn't have to be.
It could be a PR move for him.
So it was nice that he showed up. It was nice that both the goalies were there, and then veterans like Atkinson and Nyquist. When the leadership group met with the management, it was reported that one of the things that they were interested in would be a coach that had playing experience. And I think that that's something that is a good attribute of Larson's. He talked about how, having been a player, he understands what these guys are going through. He knows what it's like to get called up. He knows what it's like to be sent down. And I think he's going to be able to relate to the players in that way, which maybe Torts would not have been able to. The fact that Larson is still a relatively young coach, that might allow him to relate more to these players. So those things are all good things. Yeah, I think he can maintain some of the good things of the Torts era in terms of the conditioning and the discipline and all that. But if he brings a softer touch to it, I think that will go over well. And I certainly think the hard touch of Torts wore out its welcome this season. And in terms of what this team is going to be in the near future, as they retool things or rebuild or whatever, obviously it's going to continue to be a young team. And so we need a coach that is going to be a teacher. And Larson has experience in that realm. As you said, he had success at the AHL level. And I was thinking about this just before the podcast, that Torts was kind of a paradox when it comes to young players, because I felt like Torts loved being a teaching coach. And I think that there was a lot that he helped younger players with, teaching them how to be a pro, teaching them about, you got to be conditioned. You've got to hustle out there. You've got to work every shift. You've got to battle for the puck. You've got to hold on to the puck, those sorts of things. But then it was very hard for a young player sometimes to get ice time, you know? And so one thing that I hope will be a difference, and especially if there's not the pressure on the team to do well in the short term, that Larson will give young players a lot of rope and a lot of minutes. And hey, you might make a really bad mistake on one shift, but that's not going to get you stapled to the bench. You're going to get an earful from the coaches, but then you're going to get a chance on the next shift to go out there and make up for your mistake and learn from your mistake. So I hope that that is a change that we see under Larson.
There was speculation going around when it was announced that officially that Tortorella was out, that the Blue Jackets would probably see a coach that was going to be more of a player's coach than Torts was. Not to say that Torts wasn't, because, you know, there's been a lot of reporting done that players do like Tortorella. So, you know, I'm not saying that he wasn't at all a player's coach, but somebody that was a little bit less rough around the edges. And I think that the Larson press conference kind of really eased the tension that I had about that. He's, like you're saying, PD, seems like he's going to be a softer coach. He might be more of a CEO than anything. He's going to listen more, and all that sounds great. I think my biggest concern is he the right guy to develop young players? You know, to me, I could be wrong, but I don't see the resume of developing young players under Brad Larson. You can point to guys like Cam Atkinson, which, fair enough, Cam Atkinson was a fifth round pick, right? And he developed into a 40 goal scorer. He's not really that perennial 60 point guy that you need on your team. He has his ups and downs. You know, people point to Ryan Johansson, who's a good player, but another guy that's had his ups and downs. And you can say that probably has a lot more to do with the player themselves and the coach that developed him, which is probably largely true. But I don't see the resume of offensive players performing at a high level that learned under Brad Larson. Oliver Bjorkstrand might be the only guy. And again, he's only a 55, 60 point player. I think he could be more than that, but that's really besides the point right now. So we'll kind of see where it takes us. That's my biggest concern, is we have a lot of guys that have stagnated, guys like Liam Foudy, who is still really young, guys like Emil Bemström, you know, some of these guys that were supposed to be offensive talents, and they're, you know, putting up 15, 20 points over the course of a full season. So we'll see where it goes. I have my doubts. I think assistants could definitely have a big role in development and what happens from here. So I'm willing to wait and see, and hopefully he can get some assistants that really have a pedigree of being able to develop young players.
Yeah. And in terms of assistants, you know, we were talking about for the head coach that, like, let's cast a wide net. Let's find someone outside the box, maybe a European or something like that. But then once JD was brought in, he indicated that he wanted a coach with NHL experience. And so that really narrowed the scope of who they were looking at. But for an assistant, you know, yeah, let's think outside the box again. You know, I think you can afford to bring in someone without NHL experience to fill an assistant role. And that's how they get NHL experience, you know. Especially the coach in charge of the power play and forwards, someone who has some real innovative ideas for how to spark offense and how to get the most out of offensive players. If this team's going to be bad, like, let's at least be fun, you know?
You're right.
Let's get lots of shots, lots of goals. Like, you know, why not, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it might be kind of hard. I mean, unless Brad Larsen just makes head-scratching decisions that sometimes, you know, Torts might have done with the lineup or something like that. If this roster is not good, if Jones is gone, if, you know, whatever the case is going forward for the next season, it might be hard to judge Larsen if the team is losing, but we maybe see something positive, like you said, if the assistants come in and, you know, they know the power play. They address the power play. He knows the power play. Obviously, he knows the power play was bad. Everybody knows it. He said as much. We all know it. We all know the fans wanted to be better. So if that was one of the things that they could improve next season, I mean, obviously, I know wins and losses might not be the criteria, because like you were saying, if this team's not going to be good, then it goes back to what I said last week. The small victory needs to be, okay, we need to see guys developing. So whether it's like Texier and Bemstrom, Foodie and so on, Stenlin, you know, there's got to be something positive that we can point to when next season is playing out. If it's not in the win column, it's at least, okay, hey, this team is fun. There might be a lot of really good potential, and I feel like we talk about potential all the time, but this is the time to hopefully see that potential blossom into something so that this team can compete and legitimately compete in the future.
You know, if expectations are low going into next season, and then you have a guy like Texier come out and put up 45 points,
right,
or a guy like Foodie put up 40 points, then that's going to be seen as a success, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're going to look at some of those players and you're going to say, great, this is happening. These guys are developing and we're seeing some positive movement here.
Yeah. Well, you know, Portsline in his Sunday gathering, he talked about, you know, it being a rebuild, a full rebuild, and, you know, you tear it down to the wood. But I think the conversation then that we need to have is, well, what counts as the wood? You know, what are the pieces that are the foundation of the team going forward? Who is still going to be on the team when it's good again? Who are the things, pieces that you build around? And obviously the hope is that some of those pieces are already here, right? Obviously, you know, Bjorkstrand, great forward, signed long-term. That's one of your pieces. You know, Texier and Foodie, these are guys that the team has thought very highly of, has not wanted to part with. So can those guys take that next step and prove that they are foundational pieces as well? You know, and that's also one reason why I've said that guys like Werenski and Line A are elite talents, and they're still young enough that if you can convince them to commit, then those are pieces that you build around. Those aren't pieces that you just trade away. You can build around them if they want to stay. Now, if they don't want to stay, then okay, yeah, you have to trade, and that becomes, you know, maybe a longer process, but also get a lot for them, get big pieces for them. And if I can accept a team that doesn't make the playoffs next year, if, you know, talent is what lowers their ceiling, like if there's a limit to how good the team can be based on what the roster is on paper. But then as I'm going to the games and watching the games, I at least want to see a team that tries hard, you know, a team that at least has a shot to win some games, and a team where we see guys take the next step, or, you know, we see players battling for position, you know, guys trying to one-up each other on the team to try to earn the minutes, you know, like that stuff can be fun to watch. I'm actually, you know, this is kind of my approach this year to watching the Cleveland Indians, because I knew they weren't going to be great, but I knew there were going to be a lot of new faces and a lot of young faces, and this is their chance to prove that they can be part of the team going forward. And when you don't have expectations, like that can still be a kind of fun season to watch. I mean, I had a lot of fun watching those Indians teams in like 2010, 2011, where they were rebuilding, but that's when guys like Carlos Santana and Jason Kipnis came into the lineup, and it was fun watching them make an impact right away. And there's guys this year like Ahmed Rosario, or some of the pitchers like Aaron Civale, and it's fun to watch them reach another level. And I'm hoping that we can see that from the Blue Jackets. Like, as you said, yeah, if guys like Texier and Foodie can really establish themselves this season, that would be huge. And honestly, that in itself, that would be fun to watch, and that could make the season a success in its own way.
Yeah, it is fun when a team might have lowered expectations, but all of a sudden they're fun. I'm living that with baseball right now, just like you said with the Indians. So I get that for sure.
Yeah.
Another thing that was kind of interesting that I thought about, or actually I saw it on Twitter, so I'm not taking credit for this, but it is kind of a good point, is now I understand the Blue Jackets were never going to fire Torts, and I think that was probably a respectability factor. But, if they thought Lars was going to be their next coach, why not have just let him been the interim coach last season and get his feet wet right out of the gate, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think they were ever going to fire Torts unless Torts, well, we know Torts was probably ready to move anyway.
Yeah, well, and it gets back to what you said earlier. It goes back to what you said earlier, too, about money being a factor and Larson being the cheap option. And I think the big reason why they weren't going to fire Torts is that they didn't want to pay someone to not coach. So,
oh, yeah.
And I think it also, the money factor contributes to some of the maybe mixed messaging from the front office. You know, like there was, you know, Yarmo saying they still want to be a competitive team, but there was JD saying, oh, well, we've got a lot of work to do. And the thing is, management has a couple different jobs here. On one hand, they might have to be looking long-term in terms of the team and moving pieces in the short term to build for the long term. But on the flip side, they still have to sell tickets. So, you know, they like you mentioned the Rangers had that statement a few years back,
yeah,
kind of giving the fans a heads up like, hey, look, we're going to go through some hard times here to rebuild, you know. But that's the Rangers. You know, that's an original six team. That's a team in a big city. They can still sell lots of tickets even when they're bad because it's Madison Square Garden, you know?
But it's also New York, and New York doesn't like having bad teams, although it's kind of a thing in the past with the Knicks and the Rangers.
Yeah, but again, the Rangers and the Knicks still sell tickets. And even when one team's bad, because ownership owns both teams, they can, you know, he's still making money.
Right.
The Blue Jackets, though, don't have that luxury.
Yeah,
they can't just say, hey, we're bad, still come spend, you know, a couple $100 and bring the family to a game. You know, they still have to sell the fans on something. Now, again, I think you could, if you market the team right, you can sell the fans on, come see some of these exciting young players, you know, that are new to the league. You know, like, hey, we've got this Russian kid, Chinnikov, who's just had a great year in Russia. Like, hey,
he
can be the next star. Elvis could be a star. You know, come see these guys, you know, but you can't just sell the team on, sell the fans on, hey, we're going to be bad.
That's fair.
Because and you know, that's not going to be acceptable to ownership,
right?
Because they've just had a year and a half of very little revenue coming in because they couldn't have fans in the building for a while. They could only have limited fans in the building for a while, but they still had to, you know, pay the front office, pay the coaches, pay the players. Now they've had like some of the player salaries were deferred, and so they have to be paying out those deferred salaries. So that's going to eat into the revenue that does come in this year. So there's only so much of a loss that they're going to be willing to take by having, you know, half full stands from a bad team. And that also speaks to why, yeah, maybe they're not willing to spend $4 or $5 million a year on Gerard Gallant if he's not going to move the needle that much for the team being that much more competitive.
Yeah, I get tired of these canned responses from everybody in the organization, but I get it. I get it. Like, they got to say it. They got to spin it. So it's put up or shut up in my mind with this team. But,
well, and it's just that they can't be brutally honest. You know, there's diminishing returns for them taking that approach.
The Blue Jackets signed Gregory Hoffman. Now, he was acquired by the Carolina Hurricanes in February, and, you know, he put up big points in the Swiss National League in his past, 139 points in 136 games. you know, there was a tweet that I saw from a fan, or I guess he's a fan. He responded on Portsline's tweet about the signing. And he's a guy who lives in Switzerland. And he's like, I've seen him play. This guy's a beast. He can do this. Great guy. I hope that's the case. I don't know if the ceiling is high. I think he's like 28 years old, isn't he? So I'm not expecting a lot. But any thoughts on what Hoffman might be able to provide next season or in the future?
Yeah, he's 28 years old. He's only got 1 year, I believe, until UFA. So if he does well, he'll have a chance to move on if he wants to. You know, I think this is a signing that they made thinking that they were going to pick up someone to help them be competitive next season. So it doesn't really move the needle much now, I don't think. And it'd be interesting to know if they would have still made that move. I guess, you know, you could still hope that he gets used to Columbus, just really likes being here and decides to sign a little bit long term of a contract. But I don't know much about the guy other than he was a point per game player in the World Championships, I believe, that just happened, which is not insignificant. And from all reports, it sounds like he will at least step in and be able to play at a competitive level. And who knows, maybe he does well and we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, he was something like third in goals scored at the World Championships or something like that. So he's an intriguing player. I like the move because, you know, they only spend a seventh round to get his rights from Carolina, and it's, you know, low risk and could be high reward. You know, if he's as good as they say he is, then, you know, look, we're looking for offensive talent, right? And he could be offensive talent. 28 years old, so he's not really a prospect. You know, I don't know exactly what the window is for how long he can contribute at a high level in the NHL, but you know, let's see what he has, if he could be a piece for this team for 4 years or so, like, that's great. If he lights it up this year and he's a guy that we can trade for something better than a seventh round pick, well, then that's all profit, you know? So, I think it's a very savvy signing, and I'm looking forward to see what he can do.
He puts up 20 goals before the deadline, then.
Yeah. If a guy in baseball who you've never heard of can come up and hit 10 home runs in like a 2 week span, then why can't a guy like that come in and score 10 goals in, you know, 2 months or something crazy like that?
Money in the bank.
I feel like the Blue Jackets get these kinds of guys all the time, and we're always like, yeah, why not? And then it just ends up being, but you know, he could be a body, or he could be a guy that really makes an impact, kind of like Nathan Gerby. Nathan Gerby had like a tremendous little streak there. So, sure. You know, who knows? Did you guys watch any of the Lightning Islanders game on Sunday? I did have it on kind of in the background, and I was like, New York's going to maybe steal this. And then they did. I still think the Lightning will win the series, but I think the Islanders are pretty legit. Like, it wouldn't surprise me kind of if they somehow pulled it off.
I didn't catch any of the game. No, but I'm rooting for whoever has the best chance of beating the Golden Knights.
That's true. I want Montreal to win this series too.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Some people are joking, like, you know, rooting for the chaos of a Habs Islanders final, which I think would be just completely unwatchable hockey. It would just be dreadful.
Golden Knights Tampa Bay would be exciting for sure.
Tampa Vegas would be the most exciting series. It would be the best possible series in terms of quality of team and quality of talent in there. But the Islanders, you know, they do have some talent, and they play really well. They've got a great scheme. It's not always the most pleasing to watch because they like playing low event hockey, but they do it very well, and you have to respect that. I mean, it's like, it's kind of like what, you know, Torts like to do, but on steroids. You know, you tip your cap to them for that. They had the right plan to limit Tampa. But I think Tampa has faced that kind of hockey enough. You know, that kind of hockey really punched them in the mouth in 2019 when we beat them. And I think they learned from it. They've got guys like, you know, the Yanni Gourde line that can counter that a little bit and play that kind of hockey themselves. And, you know, they showed last year that, yeah, even as other teams were throwing that at them, that they could adjust to it. So I had predicted Lightning in six games, and I still think that will hold. I think this can be a back and forth kind of series, but I think ultimately the talent and experience that Tampa has will will win out in the end, but it should be interesting. And I think Vegas, Montreal will be interesting as well. Vegas, I think the talent should win out for them. But again, Montreal has been kind of unexpectedly playing a very good team style of hockey that has been effective in playing teams. But I think Vegas is at, you know, certainly at a much higher level than Winnipeg and more well-rounded. It has the, you know, Toronto had the high-end talent, but was not very well-rounded, and Vegas certainly is. So I think I picked Vegas to sweep that one, but if Montreal could steal a game or two, that would be fun. I hope it's a fun series to watch. Just overall, I think the playoffs this year have been really, really good and a lot of really entertaining hockey and entertaining series. So often in the later rounds, teams start to get, you know, injuries take their toll and fatigue takes their toll, and it can be a bit of a slog in the final two rounds. I hope that's not the case. I hope we can get some exciting hockey still and a bunch more overtime games and continue to be a really good postseason.
Do you guys think Nick Foligno comes back to Columbus next season?
I don't think so. Or I think it's less likely now that it's a rebuild. You know, that's been speculated that if it's not Columbus, it would be Minnesota, because he'd have the chance to play with his brother. And I think Minnesota looks to be obviously a much more competitive team. So I think that would probably be the better option for him if he wants to play for a contender. And that's, if he wants to go that route, I'm totally fine with that. If he wants to come back, I'm fine with that too. But again, I'm kind of, you know, I prefer those minutes go to younger players that are going to be part of the team long-term.
You know, the other aspect of it too is Nick Foligno steps into a very talented team in Toronto and doesn't really do much. He had a couple assists to start off with, had a chance to play with Matthews and Marner, didn't really contribute too much in the playoffs. So I think there was an article on The Athletic today talking about which players' stocks, pending UFAs, their stocks went up, stocks went down, and Nick Foligno's went down. So how many teams would be knocking at his door? Would Minnesota still be interested, you know, given his performance and his age?
Yeah. Well, and he had some injury issues as well, but obviously when he hit that age, that is a risk, you know?
Yeah, but we'll see. I tend to think that he moves on just because of the rebuild phase and then ends up living back in Columbus here in a couple of years.
Sure. I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually kind of wonder if he might be whether it's a front office guy for the Blue Jackets or even an assistant coach or something in his future. And, you know, I was thinking earlier, I saw that Kevin Dineen's name was kind of mentioned or at least put out there by Portsline. It's maybe a guy that's on the assistant staff for Larson. But one other thing that I was going to say and it went out of my head. I am assuming this team will not have a captain next season, which may not be the worst thing. Let that just kind of organically happen, or let this team figure out what they are, figure out their identity, as they like to say, because I don't think it would have been Jones, but he's going to be gone one way or the other.
Well, let's use it as enticement to get Werenski to sign long-term, like I proposed. Other than that, yeah, I would agree with you that, go captainless until an obvious captain presents himself. Maybe a guy like Bjorkstrand. I think he
Bjorkstrand. Yeah.
That could be interesting, but yeah, there's no rush on that. So, let someone else earn their way into the role.
It was announced today, I don't remember it was today or over the weekend, but reports were out that the Carolina Hurricanes are allowing Dougie Hamilton to talk to other teams about free agency. You know, it sounds like there's still a chance that he might turn back around and sign long term with the Hurricanes. I'm not at all saying that he has much of a chance of signing in Columbus. But what do you guys think if Dougie Hamilton has a shot? Let's say that Werenski says that he does want to stick around, and you have a shot at maybe getting Dougie Hamilton. That changes things quite a bit.
He's only 27 years old. It seems like he's older, but he's not that old. So, yeah, I mean, if they could somehow get him, that would be cool. I don't expect it to happen, but he's a really good player.
Yeah. He's a fantastic defenseman. If they can get him, if he's willing to sign here long term, then I absolutely consider doing that. Now, you know, what would the cost be to get him from Carolina in that case? And is it worth paying in division? I think I saw someone on Twitter proposing like, hey, why not a Jones for Hamilton? You know, do two different sign and trades or something. I don't know about that, but that could be interesting. I will say that news, it cheered me up a little bit just to know that, okay, we're not the only team that can't hold on to a guy, to a player like that. You know, because I thought like, oh, here, Carolina's been doing a better job of getting, you know, they countered the Aho offer sheet and Svechnikov feels happy there, but okay, they can't keep Hamilton happy. So, okay, so it's not just us that is dealing with these issues.
Right.
Another real interesting note to mention real fast is that Gerard Gallant's the new Rangers coach. And now I'm wondering who goes to Seattle, because I kind of thought it was between New York or Seattle for Gallant. Now I'm wondering what Seattle's move will be. Maybe it's Tortorella. I would be so for that, though. I'm already excited about Seattle. If Torts went out there, I'd be rooting for Seattle for sure.
I wonder how much the potential success or the potential talent inside the Metropolitan Division over the next couple of seasons plays into Columbus's decision to go more rebuild versus reload. You've got a Washington and a Pittsburgh team that look like they might be starting to decline a little bit, but they're still playoff teams.
Yeah.
You've got Carolina, you've got the Islanders, and now you've got Gallant in New York. It's just going to be a brutal, brutal division over the next couple of seasons, and it might be better off for Columbus to be kind of heading off that rebuild sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And by the time Columbus would be ready to compete again in a couple of years, that would be when Pittsburgh and Washington finally fall off. So that would be an opportunity there.
Yeah, maybe the Blue Jackets somehow get Ovechkin this season, but that's not going to happen. Can you imagine the Blue Jackets were just like, we're going to be bad, but we're going to sign Ovechkin to get Dougie Hamilton and be really fun scoring 50 goals or having guys that score goals and do whatever, but not make the playoffs. But yeah, I don't expect that to happen. That's going to do it for us this week. Check us out at CBJ Cannon on Twitter and Facebook. I will be putting up a Stenlin. I have a Stenlin player review for Friday. It's a guy I was thinking about, PD, and how it seems like he never plays, but when he does play, he scores a big goal or something. Maybe he'll get his chance this year. But stay tuned for that and all the other content going up this week, and we will see you all next week. Subscribe to the Cannon Cast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you can catch every episode. Leave us a review and a rating, and as always, we welcome your thoughts and feedback. Go to jacketscannon.com for more Blue Jackets coverage from us, and follow us on Twitter at CBJCannon. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Pearlie and the Howlin' Moons. Check out angelapearlie.com for more music and show dates.